Spirit Radio Podcasts.
And on the line for this week's Home and Lifestyle Tips, I have Therese Davey. Morning, Therese. How are you?
Good morning, Wendy. How are you?
I'm great. Well, so what is your website of the week this week, Therese?
Our website is the Dublin Book Festival. And we've spoke about this before in the context of libraries and the great things that goes on in our libraries. But as these are closed and festivals are off the public domain, there's plenty of talks and interviews and wonderful things going on online. So it's dublinbookfestival.com. And the thing that particularly interested me was the children's events like bedtime reading. I think it might give all the mums and dads an evening off and dip into this one.
So in terms of what, have you got any picks yourself from it, Therese?
No, not yet. I see Marion Keyes is talking about in the libraries, and there was something, there was another historical one that caught my eye, because there's a lot of things, the things in the context of the times we're going through in these years of celebrations and stuff. There's some talks and things like that, so there's some history events going on.
Yeah, it's one of the positives. On the one hand, it's like, oh gosh, I would love to have, you know, going to these events in person, but at the same time, it's nice when these talks kind of go up online and you can kind of catch them again.
Absolutely. And if it's something that you don't have the time for, you mightn't grab your attention, you can quietly leave the internet a little more easily than quietly leaving a meeting room.
Exactly. One of the things that a book that you have been checking out this week is a different type of book, a cookery book. Tell us about what you've been checking out, Therese.
I went to Delia Smith's Christmas book yesterday to look up the mincemeat recipe, and I found out of something called Stirabout Sunday. Did you know yesterday was Stirabout Sunday, Wendy?
What is Stirabout Sunday?
Well, from the collect of the Church of England Book of Common Prayer, yesterday, that last Sunday before Advent, there's a prayer, the collect says, "Stir up, O Lord, we beseech you, the wills of the faithful people." And this prompted the Victorians to get all their families to start stirring up the Christmas pudding, traditionally, on that day or on that weekend. Now, I know it's an English tradition and we spoke about puddings weeks ago, but I just thought it was unusual and funny to see it in a cookery book, the mention of the faith connection with what
it's lovely to see,
yeah. Yeah, lovely. But I went to get the recipe for mincemeat, and I'm telling you, it's one of my homemade presents I make at Christmas.
And drop in Spirit Radio, of course. Don't forget that bit, Therese.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. And but once you try homemade mincemeat, you will never buy a jar again, ever. You never buy...
Okay, but hang on, caveat. How much effort goes into it?
You put some fruit and ingredients in a bowl, and you leave it overnight, and then you add butter and stick it in the oven for 3 hours.
Okay, so that doesn't... It sounds like even I could do that.
You could, and then stick it into 6 jars and label them and give them away. And I use the mincemeat for all kinds of things. I put it through HB vanilla ice cream, and I make my own Christmas ice cream. I make a Bakewell tart once a year, and I put a little layer of that instead of jam. That's gorgeous. I put it through apple crumble. But I flicked the pages in the book and found something else. It's called Delia's Last Minute Mincemeat Christmas Cake, and I was enthralled, and so enthralled that I got a jar of last year's mincemeat and made the cake immediately, and it's absolutely lovely. So for all those lockdown bakers, and you've cracked it and you're not afraid, but you were just a bit worried, I won't try a Christmas cake, it's not too much for me. Do you remember home economics classes, Wendy, where you'd have brown paper and all kinds of things around Christmas cakes? This is so easy, everyone could do it, and it's available online, DeliaOnline.com. Brilliant.
Great stuff. And just, yeah, it's nice to go back to the kind of old school and back to basics, isn't it?
And there's brown flour in this. And it's lovely and moist and tasty. You know, I never thought you'd see brown flour in a sweet kind of cake, but that's what it is. You can use white if you don't have it, I'm sure. But it was really good. And another hint, if you're making things that involve treacle or honey, because puddings and cakes and things sometimes have treacle or honey in the recipe to darken it or to give it extra sweetness.
It's kind of a deeper texture of sweetness, isn't it?
Absolutely. Heat spoon first. It makes it easier to spoon the treacle out of the tin.
Oh, yes, because otherwise you end up kind of, you know, using another spoon or your finger and it goes everywhere.
Oh, it sticks to the side of the tin and the lid and everything. But the other tip is reverse the process. Put the tin of treacle or golden syrup on the scale and take out the weight of what you're looking for in treacle or golden syrup, which are heated spoon. No mess.
Okay, and that takes away the mess. Brilliant. Although I'll still have two children pulling at my leg trying to lick said spoon, whether it's heated or not heated. But you're that is half the fun. So what is our job of the week this week, Therese? Give it to me.
Make a list.
Check it twice.
Yep.
Okay, so this is Prezi's, is it?
It is. It's Prezi's.
Yeah. I kind of went backwards on this one, Therese, because you see, we've been doing lots of interviews here on Spirit Radio of local businesses. And every time I do an interview with these great businesses, I go onto their website and I buy stuff. And the boxes kept arriving and I was going through them with my husband, realising, like, it's all for kids, obviously, the kids and the family, and realising, yes, I'd gone a little bit overboard and hadn't really correlated a list with what I was buying online. So I've learned my lesson.
Your present box is going to be very large for the rest of the year, isn't it? But make a list and make sure you don't miss out on anyone and you don't end up buying things you don't need. Because all the chat about Black Friday, I think it's an awful term, Black Friday, but it can be very tempting for people to overspend or buy things they don't need. And there was a very good article in the Business Post yesterday about how to go through the minefield that is Black Friday. And have you seen this, Wendy? Have you seen some of the people you've been signing up? Some people are offering free delivery.
No, the thing is, I suppose I got the fear to raise after getting too many boxes in the last few weeks. But if it's a really good deal, though, might have to be tempted for something I need. Isn't that the key thing? Only if you actually need something, because it's only a great deal if it's, as I say, something you need rather than just something that you don't need at all. Then you're just spending money you don't have.
And we talk about this every January when it comes to the sales, you and I. You can easily get drawn into buying things because the deal is good or because they're really good value or there's two for the price of one or whatever they're offering. And some of the good things that are out there, if you look at some of the subscriber promotions, it might be worth signing up to some of the loyalty programs to get future discounts, or some of the temporary discounts may be good. But the other thing to do is, if you're looking at buying a tech product, sometimes they're selling off the older version, and that's why it's so cheap. And you might end up with limited features or compatibility issues that are outside the warranty or not actually supported by the manufacturer. So you need to read those things very carefully. You need to read beyond the price, Wendy, is what I'm saying. But there are deals, and it's not just about TVs and beds. Virgin Media are offering a free Philips voice-assisted soundbar when you sign up to Broadband or TV. ExpressVPN are offering 49% discount for a privacy app for mobile phones. Some people might be interested in that. But do you buy things from abroad? Do you buy things from the UK?
Yeah, sometimes, I suppose, on Amazon and that, like there are, like, so many of the rest of the world. But I really am trying to shop local at the moment. I really am.
Yeah, it's hugely important. And our local retailers are struggling. And they have websites, and they're turning their businesses around to cater for the internet shoppers. And so they are trying. But if you're buying something from the UK, you can save on the post by using a virtual Parcel Connect or Parcel Motel UK address. You can save some money there. And the other thing that the article said was, check the returns policy. Sometimes it might be too much to read the terms and conditions, but check the returns or the refund policy at least, because sometimes there may be less days for you to return something or change your mind. The days may be shorter on some of the packages and some of the special offers they're offering. It's very important. And remember that if you're buying outside the EU, you have to pay VAT on the item, including the delivery, if it's over €22. And you have to pay an import charge if it's over €150. But the last piece of advice they gave was the hackers, Wendy.
Yeah, this is where you see these great ads saying, you know, some fabulous product for like 50% of what it usually costs. And if it's too good to be true, it usually is.
Could be. There could be some really dodgy websites out there. There's stories out there already, particularly when you're spending on big ticket items like phones and things or presents. But mind the hackers. Make sure the site is a HTTPS in the address. There's a padlock symbol in the address book. And never, ever send your car details via email or use a public Wi-Fi while you're waiting for the bus or something. You do your shopping there. Just be careful where you're actually doing the shopping on the Wi-Fi. But as you say, the most important thing this year is to keep it simple and to shop local as much as you can and support those people who are struggling.
Yeah, it's such an important message, Therese. And I think a lot of people are really, really taking cognizance of that. There's a fantastic Facebook page, by the way, called Shop in Ireland, and they have a website as well. And every day, small business owners are posting up their businesses and their products, and it's just absolutely brilliant. Therese, as always, thanks so much for joining us on the programme today, and we shall talk to you at the same time next week. Spirit. Our next interview is about a very upsetting topic, so if you have little ears with you at the moment, it might be a good time to turn the radio down. it's one of those things where, at the time, certainly during discussions during the abortion referendum, we were told it was scaremongering, it will never happen. But a new paper published in a British medical journal has confirmed that babies, sadly, have been born alive in Irish hospitals after failed abortions. Now, what isn't totally clear is what happened next. Did these babies receive palliative care before their deaths? The report in the British Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology also painted a pretty harrowing picture of the work environment for those involved in the provision of abortion for unborn babies, specifically focusing on abortion where a baby has a life-limiting illness. It's described as fatal fetal abnormality in the report. With me on the line to comment on these revelations, I have Padraig Tobin, TD and leader of AIM2. Padraig, morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, tell us a little bit about this study and also why we've heard so little of it in the media or indeed in government.
Yeah, so there was a research paper carried out and published in the International Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology. And that report was built upon extensive interviews with 10 abortion doctors who provide abortions in Ireland at the moment. And, you know, their testimony is harrowing and shows it reflects to a certain extent the inhumanity of the service that's been provided in Ireland at the moment. So the report talks about one doctor getting sick in the corridors after carrying out an abortion. The doctor basically said that he had to stab the baby in the heart and there wasn't any pain relief provided for the child, the unborn child, at that stage. That potassium was injected into the heart to induce a horrific heart attack to end the life of the child, and that action had, you know, and similar actions had haunted these doctors after they had undertaken them. And it reflects, as you said in your introduction, the fact that when this legislation was going through Leinster House, you know, myself and a handful of others raised the fact that no pain relief was going to be afforded to children in late term abortions in Ireland. And that, you know, that in legislation, pain relief is offered to animals when they're being operated in this country. But the government and Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin and the Labour Party voted against our amendments to provide pain relief at that time. And here we are now where the horrific results of that are being experienced by children and obviously been reflected by the doctors who are involved in these abortions.
And as you say, Padraig, you know, hearing that doctor or reading that doctor describing, you know, getting, and this is a, you know, a medical professional who does tricky and difficult and procedures all the time, to actually be throwing up after doing the procedure shows, I guess, how gruesome the abortion procedure is. And I know from looking at the experience of other countries, that is not a unique experience, but the scary thing when you look at testimonies of doctors who perform abortions, or indeed others who are in the theatre when an abortion is happening, is this experience of vomiting, getting sick, but then becoming desensitised, and maybe that's the scarier bit.
Yeah, so I suppose healthcare, as we normally understand it, is a difficult job, but the purpose of it is to make sure that the patient survives, that the patient lives, that the patient remains healthy, is protected. And, you know, that action, I suppose, is in sympathy with the normal human behavior and desire for an outcome. But obviously, the abortion happens in the direct opposite to that normal human desire. And as a result, in this particular circumstance, in the fact that it's carried out with such violence, to be honest, it has a harrowing effect on the doctor who's involved in the procedure.
Padraig, what's in this particular report about babies being born alive? Again, this is something that I'm sure yourself and others at the time tried to say as a fear, because we'd seen it happen in other countries, and we were told that it was scaremongering. I remember Kate O'Connell, who's a TD at the time, almost sniggering at an abortion survivor telling her story. But it seems, according to this report, it wasn't scaremongering after all.
Yeah, so right around the world where late-term abortions are carried out, those late-term abortions are not successful. And what I mean by not successful, you know, in the terms of the person carrying out the abortion. So the child survives, and the child can survive, you know, in a very, very injured state. And the child can survive at an age or a gestational age where it's very difficult for that child to survive for long outside of the womb. And in those countries, we heard the stories whereby those those babies were left on steel dishes in the abortion theatres. And you know, they weren't being protected, that they were left to expire, to gasp for breath themselves. And we raised, you know, these, again, really inhumane examples in Leinster House, in the Dáil, to try to put in some level of humanity into the law so that there would be a guarantee that the child's life will be protected. And if the child couldn't be protected, the life couldn't be protected, at least that palliative care, you know, that the child will be comforted in some way.
And do we know if that's happening in these cases?
In its last moment. Well, according to this particular report, which was released, the doctors themselves are saying that they are literally begging anyone to administer palliative care to the surviving child. And that it isn't clear whether that palliative care is being delivered or not. And that in some cases, from the report, it looks like the child is being left to expire, to die without protection. And so I have put in parliamentary questions to the Minister for Health this morning, which literally asks, how many occasions are we leaving born babies who are citizens in this country, who have the same right as the Minister for Health has? Are we leaving these individuals to die without any protection, without any palliative care whatsoever? Now, I'll be honest, when I put in these types of questions to the Minister for Health, typically, they're termed in very, very opaque language, which is really, really difficult to get to the heart of what's happening here. But let's be clear about this. Myself and a handful of other TDs stated at the time of the legislation that this would happen in this country. We were told it was an impossibility, that we were scaremongering. It has come to pass, according to this report.
And Pater, where are all of those who told you were scaremonger? Where is the previous Minister for Health, Simon Harris? Where are all the others who were abortion cheerleaders? Are they responding to this?
No, see, the problem is there's no pressure on them to respond. They are hiding in clear sight. And the reason why they're hiding in clear sight is because the establishment media in this country are literally ignoring this. This appeared in, I think you're the third media organisation that has paid any attention to this, the other being Gripped, and I think there was a report in the Irish Independent, which was written from another perspective, the opposite perspective, which made some reference to these elements. But in the main, most of the newspapers, most of the radio stations, most of the media are, you know, in silence, radio silence on this. And as a result, there's no pressure put on to the politicians to answer questions on this whatsoever. And you know, the best way to make sure that the law doesn't have to change is to make this shocking side of abortion invisible to most people, and then there's no pressure to bring about that human change into the legislation.
But could there be pressure on the other side? And by that I mean, Pater, you know, it's clear in this report that a lot of hospital staff are really uncomfortable with the provision of abortion services, but then it could lead in a way to more pressure being put on conscientious objectors to conform.
Well, I suppose on the first basis, like, we again tried to put into the legislation that all doctors, nurses and medical professionals would have full conscientious objection when it came to abortion. Now, there was a very weak level of conscientious objection put into the process. But we have seen in other countries where, you know, naturally fewer and fewer people want to get involved in this horrific operations, you know, that more pressure then comes on doctors and nurses and medical professionals to actually perform these. There's an erosion, if you like, of that conscientious objection. You know, it's an incredible situation, but all of these situations that have come to pass were brought up in Leinster House, were discussed in depth by ourselves. We were told that we were liars. This would never happen. And Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Labour and Sinn Féin voted against these very, very small amendments, but important amendments that we put forward to stop this. And it's really important that people hold their elected representatives to account.
So, and what's the best way to do that? You know, for people listening who are disgusted hearing about this study, Pater, what do they do?
Well, I would ask people to pick up the phone today and call their elected representatives, councillors and TDs, to complain in this issue. I would ask people that they would actually email their elected representatives. A couple of weeks ago, there was a big a crisis in government around the mother and baby homes, correctly so. And that happened because literally thousands of people sent emails into their elected representatives complaining about the fact that the government were looking to, you know, seal these reports for 30 years in that particular case. I know that we need to show the elected representatives of this country that the horror of these particular stories are not good enough, that these need to be changed, that there needs to be amendments made to the legislation to make it more humane. And I'm asking people who are listening to this and people who are of similar, you know, humanitarian outlook to ourselves to contact through email, through phone calls, in person if possible, their elected representatives and demand that they change the law on this.
Padder, thank you so much for joining us on the programme today. That was Meath West TD and leader of AIM2, Padder Tobin, talking to us about that piece of research done in the British Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology and the impact abortion legislation is having in this country. Very chilling indeed. Spirit. One of the things that many people are unaware of is that 80% of all acts of religious persecution are committed against Christians. That makes Christians the most persecuted religion in the world. And this happens in more than 95 countries where Christians face serious persecution every single day. Probably something we take for granted here in Ireland many times. Now, this coming week, Red Wednesday, is the start of the Week of Witness, where we stand in solidarity and indeed pray for persecuted brothers and sisters in faith across the world. On the line to tell us more about the Week of Witness, we've Davide Barbieri, who's the Director for Public Affairs for Aid of the Church in Need here in Ireland. Davide, good morning to you.
Good morning, Wendy.
I think, as I mentioned there in the introduction, a lot of people are just not aware of how persecuted Christians around the world are. Tell me a little bit about the work that Aid of the Church in Need does and what we know about Christian persecution around the world.
But our own awareness is about what you said, 80% of persecution is against Christians. Aid of the Church in Need, since 1947, has been alive to try to save lives, souls, and keeping the faith. For us, we are aware that 245 million of Christians are facing extreme persecution every single day.
And so many people aren't aware of this, David. Is that one of the reasons for the Week of Witness to try and raise awareness of this critical issue?
Of course, you will not hear about this reality on the media, on the state media. There is no interest whatsoever about the pain, the suffering, the lack of interest of financial support for countries that are living in extreme poverty, and on top of that, they suffer a huge amount of persecution. The Week of Witness for ACN Ireland is a way to call faithful Christian Catholics to come together to pray and to highlight this reality that happens in every single day.
So how is it going to work this year, Davide? Because I'd imagine other years you have kind of in-person events. Are a lot of the things going to be going online?
Of course, Wendy. So I will suggest to all our brothers and sisters in faith listening this morning to check our website, acnireland.org, and all the events are advertised there. Check our Facebook page or Instagram, ACN Ireland, and all the events are advertised there. I am actually going to be into a live event. The Week of Witness in Derry, in the parish of Cregan, started last night. They had a walk of witness. They brought Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament into the village, blessing the people.
Wow, and what sort of reaction was it, Davide?
The reaction is, for us, a way to get the media talking about us. So in life, you have to be courageous. And because this example of my brothers and sisters suffering for their freedom to pray, to love Jesus, I am there in the front line. I ask the people to stand up, even here today in Ireland, because the sacrament, Holy Mass, there is not. But this priest had the courage to have a live event. So yeah, I'm there tonight.
And walk the streets and, as you say, bless the people that saw them. One of the events, David, that has grown, thankfully, some recognition in recent years is Red Wednesday. But for those who haven't heard of it, tell us a little bit about how people can get involved in Red Wednesday and what happens on that day.
Of course, Red Wednesday this year is on Wednesday, the 25th of November. I'm asking all the listeners, in your support and effort to promote Red Wednesday, we ask if you go to your parish church and ask the priest maybe to illuminate Red, their church, on Wednesday to mark the blood of the martyr of history and today. We ask the people to wear a red tie, a scarf, a hat, a jacket, to keep united with the suffering. We ask you to pray maybe the Angelus on Wednesday, to attend all our events in a prayerful, and also to pray for the persecuted Christian, but also for their persecutor, that they have the courage to stop, to put their guns down, and to learn to love and live in unity. If you cannot attend Red Wednesday in your parish, there is plenty of events live on the web. Wednesday night in St. Patrick, in Armagh, Archbishop Eamon Martin will have a prayer service where Father Peter Johnson and myself and Dr. Michael Kinsella will be present there giving an input.
And in terms of, you have also a parish pack that people can get on your website. What's in that? Tell us about that, David.
Correct. If any of the priests that you know would like to support us, first, most important, you can download a parish pack from the ACN website, ACN Ireland website, and that can be used. There is beautiful homily to be used on Wednesday. There is beautiful prayer for prayer service. So we are asking to pray. We are asking to help ACN Ireland to save lives, to save souls, to save our faith. And how can you do that? Because there will be no booklet this year to the Alive event. We'll ask you to become one of the many benefactors that pray for us. You can donate 22 euro a month. That will make a huge amount of difference for the project that we undertake every year. You can buy our mass card, ring the girls in the office. All the information are on the website. Sign up for the mirror or for the easing online. So most important, help us to help them. We at ACN Ireland, we receive no support from the state or from the church. That will give us a huge amount of freedom to trust Our Lady of Fatima, our patroness, and Saint Joseph with his divine providence.
Well, it sounds like there's going to be lots of fantastic events, as you mentioned, David, that people can get connected with online. Thank you so much for talking to us about the Week of Witness today on Spirit Radio. That's David Barbieri from Aid to the Church in Need in Ireland. And as David mentioned, if you want to get details of all the different events that are being streamed online, or indeed your pack that you can use in your church to try and get involved in Red Wednesday, you can go to acnireland.org. And you know what? It can be as simple as David said, wear that red scarf, wear that red jumper on Red Wednesday, and tell people, you know why I'm wearing red today? I'm wearing red today because I want to stand with persecuted Christians, and you know that they're the most persecuted faith around the world. It can be a conversation starter and a witness to our faith. As I said, the website is acnireland.org. Spirit. Well, maybe there's kind of a few categories of people when it comes to organising and decluttering, especially during lockdowns. You might be one of those people who has, you know, that box room in your house where all the rubbish goes in, or you get that kind of nesting feeling, you know, that you get when you're pregnant during lockdowns, and you start to organise stuff and declutter. But if you're anything like me, I find myself doing decluttering only to find the area I've decluttered ends up looking rather the same very shortly afterwards. It just goes back to the way it was. The discipline isn't there. Well, I know that my next guest is going to be able to help us with getting our houses decluttered and why it's important, how it can actually help us feel a bit more relaxed and at peace sometimes. It's great to have Susie Kell, who's a decluttering coach, on the line. Susie, morning to you.
Good morning. It's lovely to be back on Spirit Radio.
It's obvious, Susie, you know, that people are into getting organised, and there's all these, you know, Netflix series and Marie Kondo and all these different people online and Instagrammers who are showing us how to get organised. But you know what? I find myself looking at these posts and going, yeah, that's great, but getting the actual energy and drive to do it is a different story altogether. Do you find that a lot with people?
Yes, and like, it's funny because even myself, you know, I think about this all day long and I go, you know, I don't want to do it in the evening. It's, you know, it's quite a taxing thing to decide how do I want to live my life. Like, it really is quite a fundamental thing, so it makes perfect sense that it would be hard to start.
And that's the thing, is it just getting started that's the most important thing, is taking a step? Or, you know what, people might say, they might look at their kitchen or their wardrobe or whatever, and they just look at the mess and the clutter and say, I actually don't know where to start. Where do you advise people to dip their toe in the decluttering world?
Oh, brilliant question. Absolutely. Like, getting started, you kind of go, oh, it's not so bad once you get going. So there's a few things. The first one is, you know, start with something easy. Don't start with the family photograph or, you know, anything that's going to set you off and sort of bog you down. Start with something like, you know, the cutlery or, you know, old socks with holes in them, things that are easy, and just get that momentum and go, yeah, I did it. Pick something easy and low on the emotional scale.
Yeah, that you don't end up kind of feeling deflated when it's so hard. What do you find, and just from working with various clients, Susie, what are the benefits? Because you can have different people in households that feel differently about these things, where for some, decluttering might, or having clutter might really stress them out, and then for others, it doesn't bother them at all. So what are the benefits for those who mightn't have the drive to declutter in the first place?
Yeah, and that's a great thing to think about. Like, what are you going to achieve when you finish it all? You know, use that as the fuel to keep you going. So there's loads of things. One of the biggest ones for me is that, you know, I don't particularly like spending my Saturdays cleaning the whole house or, you know, searching for things. So you end up doing less tidying, less organizing, and just enjoying yourself. And in the process of that, when you've less to do and less to think about, you have so much more brain space. You know, and you can use that to create a project, to go out for a nice walk, to play with your kids. You know, you can use that energy, and especially if there's less energy at the moment, to do so many more things than just always getting stressed out and organising your stuff.
And that's the thing is there is great satisfaction when you do organise things and you actually know where stuff is. When you're looking for a kind of, what was I looking for last night? A plug-in Vicks nightlight for one of my children. For once, I knew where it was because I had reorganised the bathroom recently.
Amazing.
You can get satisfaction from it, but equally, Susie, on the other side, let's say you organise something, maybe it's your Tupperware press where usually there's lids thrown everywhere and it's flung all over the place, and you organise it, and that's an easy enough thing, it might take you 20 minutes, but then 2 days later it's back messy again and you can feel like, oh, what's the point? Is there kind of post-declutter discipline tips that you have?
Yes, that's it. You know, you really have to think long term, otherwise you're just going to get frustrated. So a few things you can do is, one, kind of think about the space. Like, is it that there's too much in there? Maybe you just need to own less things. And the other one is, be very aware of what's coming into your house. So talking about Tupperware, do you go to Dunn's and see, ooh, Tupperware is on sale, I'm going to grab a few more. But actually, you don't know what size you need, none of the lids, you know, cross fit with each other and stuff. So it's kind of stopping stuff coming in and realizing, like, what's enough. And that just sort of takes a bit of observation and reflection. And then just being tough on yourself when you're with the Tupperware in your hand in Dunn's and go, I don't actually need that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't need it. I don't need to add more clutter to my house. And that's a big thing, especially with impulse buying, as you said, Susie. How do you think we should maximise on lockdown to kind of declutter some of our spaces? I know you were saying start small, start with an easy project, but what are the kind of priorities in most houses in terms of getting the maximum benefit out of decluttering?
So with lockdown in particular, the thing I think you need to manage the most is your energy, because we're dealing with uncertainty, we're stressed out, we're in, you know, bizarre situations, we're all in the same space. So really, I think the first thing is look at your surfaces. So if you can't actually make decisions about things, even just getting them off the surfaces, clear the table, the kitchen counters, coffee table, and just see that clear space and go, okay, I can breathe. And then also just taking the time to sort of reflect on your life. Like, one thing, I was talking to my friend at the weekend and she was like, I really haven't bought that many clothes. You know, now that we're kind of, you know, forced to be, you know, in all the time and things, she's kind of like, I think I was buying them as stress relief, but not actually because I needed them. So just taking that bit of time to think about, okay, we're not really going anywhere doing things. How can I think about what I really need in my life? Or when it all opens up, what would I like to be different? And then the last thing I'll say is use the time to do something fun, like a decluttering challenge. So a number of my colleagues are doing different things, and I will be doing a Christmas breakthrough bingo challenge.
Oh, tell us more, Susie.
Yeah.
How does that work?
So I'm going to, it will be released in the next week or so. You'll get a bingo sheet with different things you could declutter. And I built myself a little bingo machine. We get a ball and we go, oh, today we have to go find a gift that we never use, and we're going to give it to someone else. So a little task to do every day. So kind of making decluttering fun, tapping into the knowledge of, like, people like myself who are on Instagram, making it more, you know, fun and accessible.
And that's the thing, kind of making it easy to do and doing a small piece at a time. And what about getting all the family involved?
Yes, this is great. So there's a very big difference between pulling back and forth, you know, with kids, with your spouse going, would you just tidy up? And they're like, well, that sounds horrible and not fun. No, thanks. To making it into kind of a game. So I have loads of ideas because this is how I get myself to do things. I go, oh, I have a challenge. Let's do this. So you can do things like set a timer for 10 minutes. Everyone gets a bag, right, go get as much rubbish or empty the school bag of old papers, that, you know, like, make it into a 10-minute challenge, go. Or you can do something like find 10 old pieces of clothes that are stained, with holes in them that you don't wear anymore. You know, like sort of giving it a very specific goal and then off you go. And another one that I find that even works with, I think I was working with someone who was in their 50s a little while ago, and as we were going through her paperwork, instead of just putting it in the bin, we crumpled it up into a ball and we tried to throw it into the bin. We made it into a bit of a basketball game. So just injecting that bit of playfulness into the whole thing can make a huge difference.
Yeah, very good tip, Susie. Thanks a million. So how can people get in touch with you and find you on Instagram and all, and get some more decluttering tips from you?
Yes. So you can find me on Instagram and Facebook. I'm Susie Kell Decluttering. And as I said, I'll have my bingo challenge going live soon. And also I'll be having vouchers available on my website, which is susiekell.com. And you can follow me for lots of tips and fun. And we're all going to get through this decluttering together.
We are indeed. And you've given us some great tips today and hopefully motivation as well. Susie, thanks so much for joining us on the programme today. That's Susie Kell, Decluttering Coach. And as Susie mentioned there, you can go to gentledecluttering.com for more tips and to find how you can follow Susie on social media.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.